Welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. As the Western powers do their best to isolate the Islamic Republic, Iran itself has demonstrated that it remains a key player in the greater Middle East and can determine political outcomes in the region. Is Iran's soft power underestimated? To discuss Iran's foreign policy, I'm joined by Mohammed Mirandi in Tehran. He's a professor at the University of Tehran. In Beirut, we have Robert Fisk. He's the Middle East correspondent for The Independent. And in Jerusalem, we have Harold Rode. He's an expert on Islam and the Middle East and a former analyst in the office of the Secretary of Defense. And another member of our Crosstalk team, Yelena Hunga. Gentlemen, Crosstalk rules, in effect, that means you can jump in anytime you want. There's a little bit of a sound delay, so let's be a bit patient here. Professor Mirandi, I'd like to go to you first. In Western media, you hear all the time that Iran is isolated. It has no friends in the world. It is a regime that's under pressure within and without. But then again, we have the president of Iran. He visits Beirut, was welcomed by tens of thousands of people, very warm welcome. We have the sitting prime minister of Iraq visiting Iran, which is, you know, if you, in the scope of history, recent history, that's very remarkable. We have, and Iran has a lot of other friends in the region, and they're genuine friends. So, I mean, how, and I phrased this all in soft power, how do you see Iran's soft power in the region and in making things happen and not happen?
Iran is definitely using soft power in the region to enhance its position. I think Mr. Ahmadinejad's trip to Lebanon was partially a reflection of that. He is, and the Islamic Republic is, according to polls carried out by Americans in the region, much more popular than the American president. And he is apparently one of the most popular individuals among among Arab people. So I think that that is true, and I do think that Western countries underestimate Iran's strength in the region. Iran has very close relations with Turkey, with Iraq, as you mentioned, as with Qatar, Pakistan, and the Afghani government, which is closely aligned to the United States. So in that sense, I think that Western countries are miscalculating and misreading the map.
Robert Fisk in Beirut, if I can go to you. Do you think a powerful Western leader could go to Beirut and get the same kind of reception that the Iranian president got?
Well, no. I mean, obviously, as we all know, the Shia Muslims of Lebanon are the largest single community in the country. They're not the majority, but the largest single community. And just as when President Mohammad Khatami came to a less enjoyable welcome from the Hezbollah than Ahmadinejad got, it's inevitable that when an Iranian president comes to Lebanon, he will receive a very considerable amount of applause. It's a fact of life. I think what was happening, I mean, I watched Ahmadinejad as he moved through the streets of Beirut and indeed went down to Qana before he went to Ben Jebel. What was very significant was that although it was very carefully a choreographed visit, it had been planned out long in advance by the Iranian diplomats in Beirut. It was a very clever one. For example, at one point when he came in from the airport and kept breaking his security rules and shaking hands with people, he waved specifically to the Palestinians of the Borja Barajni Palestinian refugee camp in Beirut. Now, no president, not even the president of Lebanon, had ever done that before. And the Palestinians responded accordingly. Here was someone who cared about their injustice and their plight, albeit the fact that many Palestinians realize, as I believe in, is the case, that Ahmadinejad is a crackpot. The fact of the matter was that he seemed to care, and he reached out to people in a way that Western leaders could not and will not do. And you see, if a Western leader came here, if Obama, for example, arrived in Beirut and waved to the Palestinians of Burj al Barajni or Ain al Helwi or Sabra Shatila, he would be loved for it, but he doesn't come to Beirut, and he would not wave if he came. And that is the difference. Even if you are a crackpot like Ahmadinejad, you'll win on the ground by saying, I sympathize with people who have suffered injustice, and that is the point.
It's interesting, Harold, and that's probably, if I can extrapolate from what Robert's point, I mean, you look at Hezbollah and you look at Hamas and political parties, the Shia parties in Iraq. That's one of the reasons why they like the Iranian president as well. He cares, and he cares about what they believe are their legitimate interests and grievances.
Well, I guess I have a rather different view here. Iran has been on a charm offensive for about 31 years since the Islamic Republic was founded, because it's Shiite and it knows that the only way they can win the battle and make sure that their type of Islam becomes the right type of Islam for the whole Muslim world is through a charm offensive to the people of the Arab world. Shiism has never cared, for example, about Jerusalem, where I'm sitting right now. But since it is the narrative of the Palestinians, of the Arab world, that's why Ahmadinejad, Khomeini before and Khomeini now, adopted. They don't care. This is simply a charm offensive, unfortunately, to win hearts and minds. Nah, it really is to take advantage of them. So as what happens would be what Khomeini said when he got off the tarmac in 1979 in February, and he said one of the things he came to correct was a problem which took place 1400 years ago in Islam, and that is when the Shiites lost and what became the Sunnis won. That's the charm offensive.
Okay, Professor Morandi, so the Iranians really just don't care about Jerusalem. They don't care about Palestine. I don't think you would agree with that at all.
That's not what I said. Shiism doesn't care.
Well, I'm saying, I'll repeat.
Well, I would disagree.
Iran or irrespective. Go ahead, Professor Morandi. Go ahead.
I think the fact that Ayatollah Khomeini has never said any such thing when he entered Tehran itself shows that your guest really doesn't know what he was all about. If you go and look at the speeches of Ayatollah Khomeini that go back well before the revolution, you'll see that he indeed, that was one of the key reasons why he and many other religious figures were opposed to the Shah. All the speeches are well documented and you can get them on a DVD. I disagree with your guest in Beirut. Obviously, Ahmadinejad is not a crackpot. He's highly intelligent. I am not a fan of the president. And I think that he is highly misrepresented in the West. But I think that the fact that he is so popular in Lebanon is not merely due to the Shias. If you look at the polls carried out just recently, a few months ago, in the United States, by a university in the United States, you'll see that he is the third most popular politician in the world among Arabs. In this poll was carried out in six Arab countries, which are among the countries which the governments are least sympathetic towards Iran. So, again, I think that
there's a problem here, and the problem is that in a totalitarian country, and unfortunately most of the Arab world is totalitarian, polls don't mean anything because people are afraid to say what they think. Because they don't know what the results
will be. No, I don't
think
so. If you look at the polls that were carried out by the Americans before the elections in Tehran, there were three polls carried out by Terror Free Tomorrow, the University of Maryland, and I think it was GlobeScan, the third. They were carried out during the campaign, and it was clear that Mr. Ahmadinejad was well ahead. In any case, that, as I said, I'm not a fan of the president or his opponents, but one has to accept reality, and that in Iran you have elections. Mr. Ahmadinejad, for various reasons, is very popular. Just a couple of days ago when he went to the city
of He stole the election. That's why there were people out in the streets rioting. I can understand why you would say that in Jerusalem. But if you go to Robert in Beirut.
Robert, go right ahead.
I'm from the
Robert,
United States.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. Okay, you let the tides wash over for a second. Look, it's true that most of the Arab world is totalitarian. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt. Because we, the West, support them. We want them to be totalitarian. We want them to control, quote-unquote, their own people to be on our side.
Absolutely.
And that's part of the problem.
And that's
actually
why we help the liberation of Iraq in the United States. If I may just continue speaking. Let Robert finish, please. Gentlemen, let Robert finish, and we'll go to... Please, Robert, please. I beg you, go ahead.
Thank you. I was in Iran for the elections, and I tell you something. I rather fear that Ahmadinejad won the elections, but I don't think he won them by the percentage poll that we were told. I think the Iranian government lied about his popularity and lied about the supposed unpopularity of the opposition. I think he probably won, but they wanted to egg it on a bit and make the humiliation of the losers greater. And thus, of course, the poll became, in effect and in reality, a fraud. But I think he might have won. You know, if you were in North Tehran,
I disagree, Robert. I live in Iran.
Can I just finish speaking?
I want 30 more seconds, please.
Could I just have 30 seconds?
And you live in Iran, cannot say what you want because you have to worry about being arrested.
We don't need everybody talking over each other. We don't need everybody talking over
me being on this program.
Robert, you finish your point. Robert, finish your
point. Please finish your point. Okay, look, if you went outside Tehran during the elections last year, you found many poor people who clearly did support Ahmadinejad, whom I do not like personally. I think he's a crackpot. But I think he probably won the elections, but by nothing like the poll figures that we were given by the Ministry of Islamic Guidance, quote unquote, in Iran, and that's a fact. You know, we have to deal with the facts on the ground in the Middle East, not the facts of fantasy, whether they be Ahmadinejad's fantasies or Netanyahu's fantasies or anybody else. Okay, I've finished. I can close down if you want. Anybody else can say what they want.
All right, we're going to go to a short break here. And Professor Morandi, you can reply when we come back. After a short break, we'll continue our discussion on Iran's ties to the region. Stay with our team.
It's the secret incursion into the country. It's the invasion by means of traditions, the language.
Желаю вам цвести, расти, копить, крепить здоровье.
And culture. The thing is that the habitants are still unaware of what's going on in their land.
You discovered Alaska?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
About Alaska? Like nothing.
I don't know anything about that.
Alaska, the great deal on RT.
Like millions of Americans, I've lost thousands of dollars in retirement funds, and I haven't had it as bad as many. It's not just about them. It's about me, too.
Poor Lehman Brothers, y'all got the shaft.
Shaft!
The government said, good luck with that.
Shaft!
And AIG, old Uncle Sam, he loaned you $85 billion, but now he owns you.
Since this is my film, I get the last word. This financial crisis will not be turned off like a light switch.
Welcome back to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're talking about Iran's recent charm offensive. But before, let's see what Russians think about Tehran's nuclear program.
Despite foreign pressure, Iran seems to be in a strong position. During President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's visit to Beirut, he assured Iran is ready to assist Lebanon whenever it is in need. And while Iran is expanding ties within the region, its nuclear program is still high on the agenda. A recent Levada Center poll asked citizens what position Russia should take if there is a U.S.-Iranian military conflict. 38% said their country should take the part of the mediator. 24% believe it is better to stand aside. And 23% think Russia should maneuver between the two, pursuing its national interests. And very few support backing either side in the case of a military conflict. Peter?
All right, gentlemen, let's pick up where we left off. Professor Miranda, you said you wanted to reply to Robert's commentary about the presidential recent presidential election in Iran. And then I would like to talk about Iraq. Go ahead.
Okay. I think it's important that Robert does acknowledge that Ahmadinejad did win the elections. But I think that his knowledge of the country is limited. In fact, when he said the Ministry of Islamic Guidance declared the results, it had absolutely nothing to do with the ministry. It was the Ministry of the Interior which announced the results. And most of Mr. Mousavi's fans have since, including many of my own colleagues and friends, have since deserted him because he found absolutely no evidence of fraud anywhere in the country. It was a very complex election process. 600,000 to 700,000 people were involved. Mass fraud is not something that can be easily hidden, and there were offers to have a partial recount, 10% of the votes recounted. In any case, and I also think it's a bit orientalist to say he's a crackpot when most people voted for him, because that effectively means that Iranians are pretty foolish people. I think that he is misrepresented, though at times he may say things that people in the West dislike. But if it's okay, I'd like to point out that, again, restate what I said earlier, and that is that, as Robert pointed out, Arab regimes are by and large all despotic, and they're pro-American, and the Americans support these regimes. But if there were elections in these countries, you would see many governments in the region that have similar views to that of the government of Iran.
Okay, Harold,
Jerusalem accepts that or not.
May I comment on this, please?
Go right ahead, Harold. That's why you're here. Go ahead.
May I please comment on this? Okay, I was going to university in northeastern Iran during the previous revolution, and I watched public opinion change. In Iran, they have a very fine sense of knowing where power is. And first of all, for the election results, which were known very clearly, very quickly after the elections closed, much better than the United States. So Iran clearly has a much more sophisticated electoral counting system than the United States.
True.
And I commend Iran on that. Excuse me.
That's not
Second
true.
Of all, what I watched in Mashhad, which is a religious city, and I was there to study Shiism. Excuse me. May I finish?
Finish, Harold, please.
What I watched very simply was that they knew how to go where power was. And that is why people in the end voted or didn't vote for Ahmadinejad. We have no way of knowing
tens of thousands of people
really
were gunned down by the Shah's regime during that revolution.
Excuse me. And your people, Nida Sultan, your people that you are supporting, you were the ones who were putting down and tear gassing and everything
else
during
the post-election results.
Your country is totalitarian.
Well, you can say that.
Right. It's only fair
you can say
to
that.
The same.
All right, gentlemen, let's. I'd like to move on.
Robert,
I'd like to go to Robert now. Okay,
Robert Fisk, as a neutral observer.
Okay,
you want me to be a neutral observer, do you, here, between Israel and Iran?
All right. I don't think anyone would ever call you. Robert, let's change the subject because we're not going to go anywhere with this issue here. Okay, let's talk about Iraq. Okay,
I've got one thing to say,
Go ahead.
For Professor Mirandi.
All right.
We have plenty of crackpots in the West. For example, Berlusconi. And instead of being would-be war criminals, like perhaps the president of Iran, we have a real war criminal in the British Isles called the former Prime Minister, Tony Blair. We've all got our war criminals and crackpots, but we have to deal with realities. But you want to talk about Iraq.
I would disagree with you.
You're spot on about going to Iraq because Iran has won the Iraq war. And I don't think there's anyone on this program who would honestly deny that.
Okay. All right. Gentlemen, let's go. Harold, we have to move on, okay? I want to talk about Iraq here. We have a sitting prime minister in Iraq.
You sound like an American wanting to move on all the time.
Okay, yes, okay. I remember that from another program you were on, Robert. But if I go to Professor Mirandi, did Iran win the election in Iraq 7 months after the last vote was cast? Because after all what the Americans did in the legal war in Iraq, and we have Tehran We have politicians going to Tehran looking for blessings. I mean, the Americans really must be, well, I mean, the whole region must be just at odds and trying to think about what the Americans really wanted to achieve there, because now we have basically a pro-Iranian regime in Iraq.
Well, I would disagree somewhat with that.
I'd like Professor Mirandi to answer first. Go ahead.
Well, he can interrupt me if he likes. I'll interrupt him too. But I think that Iranians would think that that the new Iraqi government, the current Iraqi government, is a good thing for Iran, in the sense that they do have close relations with the country. But at the same time, the Iranians were very much opposed to the American invasion of the country in the first place, and the Iranians believed that the invasion and occupation were illegitimate. But also, it's natural for Iran to want a neighbor which has a good relationship with it. But the same is true with Afghanistan. The government in Afghanistan is led by a Pashtun president who is very close to the United States. But Iran's relationship with the Afghani president and the Afghani government is quite good. So I think that it's normal, and I don't think that the Iranians or that the current Iraqi government would see the elections as a victory for Iran. I think it would be seen as an election, a victory for the majority of Iraqis, despite the shortcomings and despite the fact that there's huge sectarian problems in Iraq, which the United States caused, by the way, when it played off one sect mm-hmm. against another, one race against another a few years ago when it invaded the country for its own short-term gains.
Okay, Harold, do you want to jump in there? Go ahead.
Sure. I was part of the American operation in liberating Iraq. I can tell you that there's no doubt that a lot of Iraqi Shiites felt enormously oppressed by Saddam's government, as did even some Sunnis. But I can also tell you that from my own experiences, and this is talking with both religious leaders, political leaders, whatever, the fear that Shiites have in Iraq of Iran, because Iran is an empire and they are constantly trying to take over other places, and that's what the Shiites of Iraq, by and large, were afraid of. They want to be free. They don't want their lives to be dictated by Iran or anybody else. And that is the basic problem here.
Okay, Robert, I was surprised we hear the word empire. I mean, the only empire that I can think of in the region is the American empire right now. I mean, I was going to say
the same thing. If Iran is an empire, what other countries does it control? I'm sure the Americans would claim maybe Lebanon, but I don't think that's
controls,
actually correct.
That's a simple answer. Iran isn't even 50% Persian.
Oh my
Iran
goodness.
Is all well, sorts of things.
We're gonna, see,
all
here what we're doing
groups,
is we're doing exactly the what the Americans do. We're going into ethnicity again. You know, we draw these maps, don't we? We draw the map of Iraq. The Shiites are at the bottom, the Sunnis are in the middle, and the Kurds have the top bit. We draw the same maps of Lebanon. The Shiites are at the bottom again, of course, and then they're in the east, and then the Maronites are in Beirut, then more Maronites in Batroun, and Sunnis and Alawites in... We never draw maps of Washington black and white races. We never draw maps of Birmingham in England, you know, Muslim and non-Muslim, but we draw all these maps of the Middle East because we want to remind these people of how different they are from each other. And the fact of the matter is, Iran is not an empire.
Excuse me, as an American, one who worked 28 years for the American government, this doesn't have to be a sectarian problem.
What we need... This is hopeless. What we need to do is to see the Middle East as a historical entity and, frankly, to stop interfering in it. You know, when it comes to the end of the day, we always arrive, we Westerners, we're going to liberate the people, we're going to free them from injustice, from dictators, blah, blah, blah. And we always arrive with our Apache helicopters and our, our A1, M1, Abrams tanks and our swords and our horses and so on. And what we do not do in the Middle East is bring the people justice, which is why I believe we should send all our doctors, all our bridge builders, all our mathematicians, all our teachers to the Middle East if they invite us, but not our soldiers. And that is the core element of the whole thing.
Okay.
Excuse me, Robert.
Yes, in terms of Iran,
we must say one thing here.
Okay. I'd like to give... We're running out of time here. I'd like to give Harold the last word. Go ahead, Harold.
We are indeed, yeah.
Excuse me. The fact of the matter is that Americans are, if you want, if at the very best, we are reluctant imperialists. We go and then people get mad when we want to leave. We don't want to leave. Our people don't, excuse me, we don't want to stay there. Our people don't want to stay there. I would just
I think you were right the first time.
One other thing. Iraq is the only Arab country today where people can have discussions and they don't end up killed when they don't agree with the government. There isn't fear there. There are hundreds and hundreds of newspapers in Iraq today. Not official government this and official government that. They're news stations. They're TVs. This is freedom. People can go into a government office today in Iraq.
We could easily do this for hours. Easily. But we're going to have to end it here. Many thanks to my guests today in Tehran, Beirut, and Jerusalem. And thanks to our viewers for watching here on RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules. We'll be right back.